Do not wait for leaders. Do it alone, person to person, as Mother Teresa is often credited as saying. And indeed, we should. We should do that. Fear and fret about absolutely anything, my friends, can so often be eased and soothed a bit, if not downright eliminated sometimes, through action. My motto is this. If you catch yourself saying something like, man, that's really a problem. Someone should do something about that problem. Then that someone should be you. Apathy is epidemic. So is outrage. But some of that outrage leads to action, although some of it only leads to complaints. Friends, sharing our opinions on Facebook is fine and good, but it's not enough. Yet many don't know what else there is to do in order to counter the issues that keep us up at night. The thing that stands out for me, and I hope for you too, is that many of the people who have made such stunning, heart-opening, world-changing, consciousness-expanding contributions to the world simply took action. They didn't wait for permission or the perfect timing or funding or the MBA or even completely fleshed out plans sometimes. They simply went to work, guided often only by a feeling of doing something that mattered, something that helped to heal the world's ills, something that, simply put, had to be done. And we all have a lot to learn from such self-made leaders. Each day, we're almost all guilty of turning the other cheek to an injustice, if not speaking up, so we don't cause trouble or make a scene. And we're made to be mere bystanders, witnessing but not engaging, or assuming someone else will fix the mess, feed the hungry person, or show compassion to somebody in pain. But it doesn't have to be that way. Every human being can, and I would argue must, give to others, even if only a kind word, and do their part to heal places where our world is broken. One person can't do everything, but we must each do something. And tonight, we're talking with people who did just that. A moment befell each of them in which they saw a place to act for the good of all and did so. They didn't wait. They just took the first step and simply began to do the work. Tonight, that's what we aim to explore. Think of tonight's show as a meditation on Mother Teresa's advice. Indeed, let none of us wait for leaders. Let us do the work, person by person, and all take deliberate and real action in every moment that we can, human being by human being. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America,
this is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Loving is what I got. I said, remember that. Loving is what I got. I said, remember that.
Up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
Tonight's show, it's really all about people who didn't stand on the sidelines and wish that someone would take action. They each said that something had to be done and they did it. And that really matters. We're talking about change agents tonight, people who are just doing the work they know needs to be done day by day. And they're working to make our world better and stronger, more loving, more compassionate, safer, healthier, and sometimes just funnier. We'll have some great guests joining us throughout the program to offer their insights, too. Jen Bosworth will join us to talk about tackling illness and grieving through humor and theater. The director of Random Acts of Flowers will be joining us a little bit later. Gerard McClendon, talk show host on Lakeshore Public Television, he's going to talk with us about his very personal fight to stem gun violence and help those impacted do some healing. We'll be talking with the founder of Peacebook, the founder of StopStreetHarassment.org, and the founder of DeedPin, a social media network that helps people connect over doing good deeds. We're going to talk to all those folks tonight and really take a look at people that are doing this work person by person. Producer Rachel Woodall will be the voice on the other end of the line when you call tonight, 312-981-7200, to share your comments throughout the show. But you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and contribute contribute to the conversation by social media tonight, during the show, and all week long, of course. We'll be back to get this conversation underway on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and tonight we're talking all about change makers, people that took Mother Teresa's advice and didn't wait for people to give them permission to do it. They just did it person by person. They saw a need for something to be done, and they took action in a meaningful way. We're talking with people tonight who really took that advice, right? We all hear Mother Teresa say, you know, don't wait for leaders, do it alone, person to person. And that's who we're talking to tonight, people who took that advice and did those things. And our first guest is someone I really admire, and that is Holly Curl. She is the founder of Stop Street Harassment, and they are doing really fascinating work to just help make people safer while walking down the street and being in public spaces. Thanks so much for being with us tonight, Holly.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
Thanks, Holly. I'm so glad that you're here, and I know that you're out and about. There's a lot of activity going on right now in D.C., so where you are, so we won't keep you too long, but I want to talk about your organization and particularly a new project of your organization. But perhaps to start, you could tell us how you came to found Stop Street Harassment and what that moment was for you where you just, you know, realized this is something I need to do.
Yeah, so it was a little bit gradual. I was in graduate school in Washington, D.C., and had to do a master's thesis in a public policy and women's studies focus. And I was looking around online, and I came across a website that used this term street harassment. And I saw all these stories that were like experiences I had had, where men were whistling at you on the street, saying inappropriate comments, following you and grabbing you. And so I ended up doing my thesis looking at how people were using websites as a way to sort of deal with this issue and share resources. And I turned in my thesis, was kind of done with it, but had shared some information online. And so few people were talking about this back in 2007, 2008, that a reporter found me, or different reporters found me, including one from CNN. So in 2008, I was interviewed for a feature article on CNN.com about street harassment. And that's when that was sort of my moment when I decided to work on this issue further, because people started sharing their stories with me, finding me sharing their stories. And I also saw a lot of misinformation, people saying it's a compliment, it's no big deal, it's people's fault because of what they're wearing. And I also realized that some of the websites I had studied were already gone. So that's when my life partner was like, you should start a website. And my parents told me, you should write a book. And so since that moment, I have really done a lot of work to try to fill in the holes that I see around this issue, whether it is having a book or a website. And the latest project you're alluding to is along those lines as well. There has never been a hotline in our country specifically around this issue, yet 65% of American women have reported experiencing street harassment. And so this past summer, in partnership with the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network and Defend Yourself, we launched a hotline, and it is available 24/7, Spanish and English, and you can call by phone or online. And so if you go to stopstreetharassment.org, there's a big homepage banner with all the information for it.
Wonderful. That's such a great thing to do, because I think a lot of times people don't, you know, something happens, someone shouts something at you on the street, something like that, especially if it's like a regular thing at a certain stretch of your daily walk, something like that. It's hard to know sometimes what to do. You just kind of are stuck with the feelings of it later. Like, oh, that feels icky and gross and I'm angry, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what legally I can do. I don't know what to do and keep myself safe. I think there's a lot of questions, especially for young women, you know, who aren't, you know, maybe aren't really sure what to do or where to go. I think this hotline is such a wonderful resource for them. Give us the name of your books also so people can find them. I'm already seeing people asking for them as we're talking.
So I have three, and the two that are probably most relevant for people, the first one is Stop Street Harassment, Making Public Places Safe and Welcoming for Women. And that is a really good primer on what street harassment is and what are sort of the ways we need to address it. And then the second one that would be a good resource for people is, it's pretty short and informal, but it's called 50 Stories About Stopping Street Harassers. And this is a collection of just what it says, 50 basically one-page stories collected from my blog and other places where people were able to deal with a harasser in a creative or empowering way, whether it was someone who was harassing them or someone they witnessed being harassed. Because I think that it's so hard to know how to respond in the moment. And the more we can educate ourselves on a range of options, the better equipped we'll be to make that split-second decision and respond in a way that feels empowering to us. So those are the two books that I think can be good resources for people.
Excellent, excellent. And I know that you have to run here in a second, but in summation, what advice would you have for someone who is really feeling like they need to take action on an issue right now and aspire to maybe start an organization like you did and aren't really sure where to start? What does that first step look like?
The first step I'd say is to research what already exists. So that's always what I do before I start any initiative, is see what exists and then perhaps partner or build on something. And then if you know nothing is there, then go forward and start to build something. Because I hate to see people recreate the wheel or working in silos when there could be room for collaboration. So that's what I would say is the first step is just research, see what the landscape is, and then definitely go for it. Because even if something does exist, like, you may have a unique perspective or way of going about it. So reach out and see if there's room for collaboration.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. Holly Curl, founder and leader of Stop Street Harassment. You can find out more at stopstreetharassment.org, and I will be tweeting out links to your organization and books and the hotline that she mentioned a little bit after the program. Thanks so much, Holly.
Thank you, Amy. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news with our good friend David Jennings and all that good stuff. And when we come back, we are talking with the founder of a website called DeedPin. And it does two things. It helps people do great deeds, but it also helps connect them to other people who want to do the same kind of good work, which is something that sounds like a pretty good idea to me. So we'll be right back in just a bit to do all of that good stuff here on 720 WGN.
Kick off the holiday season at the BMO Harris Bank Magnificent Mile Lights Festival on November 18th and 19th. Grand Marshals Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse from Walt Disney World illuminate 1 million lights during a Saturday evening tree lighting parade. Plan your trip at themagnificentmile.com.
Thanksgiving is right around the corner. If you want to look 10 or 15 years younger around the dinner table, pick up the phone now and order Esotique XV. The results are brilliant and really quick. Here's what Donna from Kingsville, Maryland had to say. I love Chamonix products. They absorb nicely without residue, and I look at least 10 years younger than women my age. Esotique XV is better than anything you can find in department stores. Why? Plant stem cells, natural peptides, hyaluronic acid, and flower extracts. Amazing ingredients and a proprietary-based delivery system that guarantees quick, clean absorption for maximum results. Simply brilliant, effective, and fast. Call 800-577-8623 to try Esotique XV for yourself. You'll feel the difference and see the results very quickly or your money back. No questions asked. Call now, and for the first time, you'll get Genucel for bags and puffiness free with your order. Best offer of the year. Try Esotique XV risk-free today and get Genucel as your gift. Call 800-577-8623. 800-577-8623.
That old car is worth money. Visit VictoryAutoWreckers.com for an instant quote. VictoryAutoWreckers.com.
Victory, AUTOWreckers.com.
Get a jump on your holiday shopping. Buy everyone on your list a MyPillow. Buy now and MyPillow will extend their money-back guarantee through March 1st. Plus, you'll get four MyPillows for the price of one. Buy one premium MyPillow, you'll get one other premium MyPillow for free. Plus, two Go Anywhere pillows. Also absolutely free. MyPillow has helped over 25 million people get the best sleep of their lives. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you've ever owned. It has a patented interlocking fill that conforms to your preferred sleeping position. There's nothing else like it. MyPillow is non-allergenic, machine washable, and proudly made in America. It makes the perfect Christmas gift. Plus, they've extended their money-back guarantee through March 1st. Call today, 800-299-9579 or MyPillow.com. That's 800-299-9579. Use promo code WGN for four MyPillows for the price of one. And give the gift of a great night's sleep. Go to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN. All right, my friends, we are going to get you to news here in just a second with our good friend David Jennings to keep us updated on all the things happening. When we come back, we are talking with the founder of Peacebook. That is a really interesting organization that is really with the theme that we're talking about tonight, that is all about doing it alone, person to person. And we're going to be talking with the founder of a company called DeedPen that helps connect people whose hearts are in the same place and want to do the same kind of good deeds. So lots of good stuff happening on the show tonight. Please stick with us. The news tonight is sponsored by thehipandkneecenter.com. Here is David Jennings.
Thousands of Trump protesters march for a fourth straight day today here in Chicago. Several thousand are marching in downtown Los Angeles, denouncing the Trump campaign pledge to deport people who entered the U.S. illegally, as well as his comments about women. And Gary's mayor and other leaders talked to two key state senators today to talk about how to keep the Gary Community School Corporation financially afloat after voters said no to a general fund referendum for the second time in 18 months. Sports, traffic, and weather next.
Da, 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 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And tonight we are talking all about people that have just taken it upon themselves to just do work that makes a difference in the world. You know, people that don't wait for all the big plans necessarily, or permission or an MBA or whatever necessarily. And they've just said, here's something that needs to happen, and I'm going to do something about it. And that is some of my favorite stuff to talk about. And I think any regular listener of this program might have caught on to that by now. But I just love that topic of people who really just kind of take the wheel and say, you know what, here's a way that I can make the world better, and I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to wait. And our next guest joins us by phone right now, Allison Welkin, who is the founder of a company called DeedPen. We have had her on this show before, early in the process of DeedPen. So you probably heard about it when it was just a kernel of an idea, but now it is a full-fledged thing. And you can go to DeedPen and find out a lot about it and how it all came to be and all that good stuff. But Allison is with us now, and I'm hoping, Allison, that you can tell us a bit about DeedPen and what you have going on with it right now, because it is really such an interesting organization that really seems to be connecting people wonderfully.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I loved the song for the intro of this. It was Wake Up, actually, by our co-founder, Sir the Baptist, who's also doing his part in trying to change the world. So that was a great intro. But pretty much what we're doing at DeedPen daily is trying to encourage people to just think more consciously about doing good. Right now, everybody's kind of concentrated on all this hate and anger and being upset. So DeedPen's becoming very relevant within the last month, week, even. Our goal has always just been to make as many people as possible feel loved and cherished and wanted and valued. That's really all we want. What we started out with just a website, deedpen.com, where people could go and pin good deeds. That's where DeedPen came from, like on a map. We just recently, within the last month, launched our app. So it's now an app, super simple. We launched it at the Jay-Z and Beyonce charity concert. So now people can have that outlet at their fingertips. Social media, especially lately, is all about people complaining and angry and upset and all of that. And we just want a place where people can go to push positivity back into their daily lives. It's pretty much just a feed of inspiration and encouragement and pretty much feeding off the butterfly effect. If you see someone do something good, you're more likely to feel good and want to do the same for someone else.
I love it. I love that so much. And I love the idea. Where did you first get the initial idea to start DPIN?
It was actually our co-founder, Sarah the Baptist. He had the idea back in about 2012, and then we met in 2014. And I'm a nurse at Northwestern, so he was just like, oh my gosh, this is so perfect. Let's get this thing going. And it just became the most perfect collaboration and partnership, and just worked so well with, you know, my line of work is obviously caring for others, and both of our passions just come together and make it thrive so well.
Certainly. That's so wonderful. What type of deed do you see pinned on there the most, or is it really just too varied to tell?
It's really too varied. It's anything from, you know, I told a stranger they were beautiful, to I raised enough money to pay for a whole classroom of kindergartners to be able to go to college when they graduate. We even recently were with Indiana University Dance Marathon. They danced for 36 hours straight to raise money for Riley Children's Hospital. This year, they raised an amazing $4.15 million just for one event. And so it's just the simplest thing to buying someone coffee, smiling at a stranger, telling someone that they're beautiful or valued or wanted, to something huge like raising money for a great cause.
That is so excellent. I was looking at it a little bit earlier, and it seems like I saw a lot of people that like raise money for races and things like that. So people are using this kind of as a, or using it also, I should say, as a, sort of a supplement to their other social networks as they're, you know, raising money for a big marathon or something like that. So how far in advance are people putting something like that up on DPIN?
Usually not any further than like 2 months, anywhere from 2 months to like a week, to kind of just give their little fundraiser or whatever they're doing an extra little boost. And then a lot of it is also like, I just did something and, you know, maybe someone else could do this today to make someone else happy.
Have you seen any huge collaborations come out of DPIN yet? I know it's still very young, but have you seen, you know, two people maybe on the other side of the world or something connect over, you're doing that, I'm doing that, let's do this and build something bigger? Have those started happening yet in this stage?
Not on a big level. We have partnered with a couple people just that, because we've been traveling a lot and finding people. We've partnered with Save the Music Foundation that we found. There's this boy in New Mexico that has made like over 1,000 bars of soap for the homeless. So we kind of reach out to people and things that we're able to partner with and kind of do our part in that way.
Excellent. So everyone should go to deedpin.com. And where can we connect with DPIN on social media?
Every social media, it's at Humans of DPIN. DEDPIN.
And that's on Instagram, Facebook.
Instagram, Twitter. Yeah, Facebook,
stuff.
It's just DPIN. But
excellent.
Yeah,
well,
and we have a new app that's free.
Yes,
so
and that's for Android and iOS?
Just iOS right now. We're working on the Android.
Okay. iPhone users, go get it. And Android users,
yes,
give it a minute, and then you can go get it yourselves. All right, my friends. Allison Welkin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
We're all going to head to DPIN and be inspired, and we're all going to connect with you on social media. Thank you so much, and continued
thank
success
you
with DPIN.
Thank you. Just spread the love.
For sure. I love it. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and be back in just a bit. And we're going to be talking with Anthony Mosley, who has started something called Peacebook that is really, really interesting. You're going to want to hear all about this just in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Babe.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. tonight we're talking all about people that are doing really important work to help make the world a better place in that very do it person to person kind of way. And I'm really, really thrilled about the group of guests that we have for you tonight, because all of them are working in such different capacities to try to make the world so much better. And that's so important, because I think sometimes think about it as being all political or you know, all focused on one cause or topic, but really there's so many different ways that we can all contribute to help move the needle, to help make the world better. My next guest joins us by phone, Anthony Mosley. He is the artistic director of a company called Collaboraction and is the festival director of Peacebook, which is something produced by Collaboraction. Thanks for joining us, Anthony. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about the work that Collaboraction is doing.
Well, you know, we're a Chicago theater company. We've been around for 21 years, and we make original devised theater about our most critical social issues. And 4 years ago, we kind of had a landmark production that explored the root causes of violence in the city of Chicago, and it was called Crime Scene, a Chicago Anthology. We really believe that the violence that has been perpetuated by 200 years of segregation is the most important issue of our times. And for 4 years, we've been making work about that and also stories of hope and healing and sharing that with over 15,000 Chicagoans.
Excellent. That's so excellent. I think that topic is so very interesting, and one we've talked about a lot on this program, that you know, the segregation issues in Chicago, you know, going all the way back to just the way the city is constructed, like it's built in a way that keeps people from connecting. And I think that's so important to keep having that conversation.
And you know, this is not something that any of us did. This is 200 years in the making. So we may not be responsible for the segregation, but we have to be part of the solution and active participants in accelerating the equality of our city.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me about Peacebook, a festival that you work on also.
Well, we did a thing called Sketchbook for 15 years, and it was world premiere short theater, visual art, and music. It was really a rite of passage in the Chicago theater industry. We worked with a lot of national stalwarts and launched a bunch of careers. And like I said, 4 years ago, we made this show, Crime Scene. We partnered up with the Chicago Park District and the Nights Out in the Park program. We sold out our home in Wicker Park. That show.
Uh-oh, you're breaking up. You're breaking up a tiny bit. Go back to the place where you were standing a minute ago. We heard you perfectly then.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it sounds a little better.
We basically toured the city with, in summer, we created a festival, a peace book, 21 world premiere pieces of theater, dance, and music about peace in Chicago. And we toured it to Englewood and Austin on the west side and uptown at Clarendon Park on the north side. And we had over 255 artists from Chicago come together to create these 21 pieces about peace.
That's so wonderful. And what was the immediate after effects of that festival when you first launched it?
Oh, well, you know, the response was amazing, and the relationships and the community that was built was really powerful. We had acclaimed Chicago theater artists like GQ of the Q Brothers and Cheryl Lynn Bruce working with and alongside very talented but undiscovered artists, emerging artists from the neighborhoods. And, you know, I believe that art is, you know, and theater specifically as a shared artistic experience, it could be a real game changer here in Chicago in regards to increasing the peace. We know we have maybe the greatest theater community in the world here in this city. We have great storytellers and actors, and the advertising industry is strong, and the theater and TV film industry is strong. We need to figure out how we can capture the power of art and narrative to get more people to be inspired to be a part of the solution in this great city. There's a lot of concern about the national climate and racism and fear mongering, and rightfully so. But we still, as a city, need to look at our own front yard and make sure that we are all a part of the solution in helping to bring hope and opportunity and resources to our neighborhoods that have not received them equitably.
Truly, truly. I really love the message and the mission here that you're working on. What is next, and what's ahead for this organization?
Well, you know, we have a show right now running at our home in the Flatiron Arts Building in Wicker Park. It's called The Mars Assignment. It's about people living with mental illness. Whole other topic, but something that's really prevalent. 1 in 5 of us is dealing with depression or bipolar or anxiety disorder, and the stigmas are just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So that show is running and really great. We have a show in the spring called Gender Breakdown, about gender disparity in the theater and the world. And it's made up of a team full of female identified theater artists, 11 actors or actresses, designers, writer, director, all female team. That's in February and March. And then very shortly here, we're going to be taking submissions for the new Peace Book Festival, which will be launching next year. And we're looking for Chicagoans from all neighborhoods to submit their short visions. We really, like I said, think that we can bring people together around the idea of peace in Chicago. And, you know, this work is as important as ever. Not only do we have rising homicide and shooting numbers in the city of Chicago, but, you know, what it means to be a Chicagoan and a part of this country right now as an artist. You know, it's never been more important for us to be making this work. And, these are the times that we really, can make a difference. So Collaboraction is just excited to be here and part of this cultural fabric of this great city. And, we want to get more people to become a part of the solution, to increase the peace in the city that we love.
That's such a wonderful message. I love it so much. Where can people find out more, both about submitting work to Peacebook and also about the shows that you have running now and the one that you have coming up in February, which I am very excited about, by the way?
Please come. You know, let me say, I'm talking about very serious stuff, but we are contemporary. We are social. We really take fun seriously. We believe that you have to laugh so that you can cry. And we believe that art can really open up the dialogue and really cultivate empathy and new perspectives. And this is what we need right now. So you can go to collaboration.org and check out our website. We're very active on Facebook. We have a ton of videos on YouTube. And we're an inclusive company. We really want to serve the whole city. And that's why we travel throughout the summer to the neighborhoods. And that's why we have an After School Matters program. And we're really proud to be put in this position where we can be making this important work for the city that we love right now. So please check us out. We'd love to have you out to check out Gender Breakdown. And I'm enthused by your show. You know, do it yourself. We all need to ask ourselves what we can do to help manifest a better world locally, nationally. I think this is a time for everybody to really take stock of our assets, and be it money, time, or great cupcakes, find places to share those assets with other Chicagoans, because that's where community really needs to meet all of the other factions of our city, the police, the government, the churches, the schools. Ultimately, the people need to rise up. We are the tide that will bring the energy and the love and the resources to the city. And like I said before, art, theater, I think we hold the key to, plus technology. I mean, this is a new age. We have the power of technology that can amplify our voice and inspire this great city to do what the Cubs did, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Now you're talking. Absolutely. Anthony Mosley, thanks so much for being with us. He is the artistic director of Collaboraction. And as he said, you can go to collaboraction.org and find out about the productions he mentioned and how to submit work to the upcoming, the next edition of Peace Book. This sounds very, very cool. And I will see all of you there. Anthony, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Thanks. You too. All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break. We're going to check in the newsroom with our good friend David Jennings. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about theater a little bit. We're going to talk with our good friend, Jen Bosworth, about a show, a one-woman show that she has done tackling really big issues of illness and grief and all of those things through comedy. So stay tuned for that for sure. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. We are talking all about change makers tonight. People who saw a thing that needed to be done, saw a need to be filled and said, you know what? I'm doing that. I'm just going to do that. I'm not going to wait for permission. I'm not going to wait for whatever. I'm just going to go do that thing. And one of the people that has done that very thing is our good friend, Jen Bosworth, who is here in studio with us. You know her. She's on this station all the time. You guys know her so well. She does lots of cool things. Every time I talk with you, I feel like you're or look at your social media, you're like doing lots of cool new things because you're an idea factory. But one project of yours in particular, I think, is so relevant to what we're talking about tonight. And that is your one woman show.
Yes, indeed.
And how you know, it's funny. You're funny. It's funny. And how it is a vehicle that a funny vehicle for very serious healing topics.
Yes. I mean, I feel like, and Anthony was talking a little bit about this on the last segment, that theater in particular is so much about connection and being in a room with people and just sort of telling the truth. And I think, especially with comedy, it is a way to break the ice and then sort of get into the deep stuff. And people sort of don't know they're being healed.
Right, right. I mean, we talk on the show a lot about satire and how it has the power to do that. Right, particularly like how Dave Chappelle was able to do when he had his show. He did such powerful political and social satire in a way that you didn't even realize what he was dropping on you.
Right. And I think that's the message of my show. The show's called Why Not Me? And it is a play on different topics. But the show is called Why Not Me? And it is sort of a story about grief, but in a way that is not like you want to hang your head and just go home feeling like things are terrible. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important, the balance of, yes, life is hard, with also life is hilarious. And I think especially now, we need both things. And I think there's a time where one takes precedence. So we need to grieve when we need to grieve. I know there's a lot of feelings happening right now. And then we also need levity. And I think it makes it easier to take in when there's some comedy.
And I think it's so healing, especially like the role that comedy plays is so fascinating to me. I've thought about this for so many years because I just think it's so dissected in that way. We just think something's funny. A guy gets like hit in the crotch or hit with a pie or whatever.
Right.
There's so much to it. And I remember when comedy theaters in this city immediately after 9/11 were kind of like, okay, so obviously the show's canceled tonight, but what do we do tomorrow?
Right.
And suddenly there was a decision made and everybody surged forward. And some of the best theater improv theater that I've seen in years happened that week because people needed the laugh, needed to go there, needed to name the pink elephant in the room,
absolutely,
needed to get through it in a way that they could access. And I think that's a lot of what comedy does, is it makes it accessible.
I totally agree with that. And I think that the need to heal, even if people don't know that they need it, and that release in a safe space where we know it's okay to laugh, even though things are really heavy duty, and giving, for me as a solo artist, it's like giving people permission to laugh, even at, not at, but in the realm of death and sickness and cancer, because the show is about, it is sort of about my mom's sickness and her eventual death from cancer, but it's also very funny because even as she declined, she was hilarious. And there are just funny. The world, to me, doesn't stop being funny because something horrible happened.
Yeah.
It may for a moment. And like the comedy people in the city said, let's pause. And or maybe, you know, people on Wednesday paused. And then it's like, well, what can we do? And like, I love the idea of the show. It's like, how can we be agents for change in a time that is so unknown and scary to so many people.
And when comedy is done right and well, it plays such a cathartic role, because I think sometimes people dismiss it as escapism of like, well, you're right. Not dealing with those big issues.
Right.
But that's to me when it's taboo. To me, it's taboo when you're like, I'm not going to think about anything that just happened in right. the whole wide world, but I am going to go see the Care Bears movie or right. what, you know, that's when it's weird.
Yeah, that's denial.
That's denial. But when you're really stepping into it and saying it's the same way that if you're at a funeral and someone says something and it's like this laugh from down in your bones. It's so cathartic and needed.
It's so needed. I think that's the thing. It's like, I think when you see a need for change, and you can tap into something that will facilitate change, whether it's comedy or whether you're doing some kind of community organizing, if you can tap into the needs of people, you will change stuff. Because people want to change. And I think people want to move forward and don't know how, especially in times of uncertainty and of fear. And it's like, I want to tell people, yes, this is a show about death, and it's also hilarious, and give people permission to let go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's not hold on so tightly that we are so miserable all the time.
Yeah.
I think it's important to be miserable from time to time, because it just is. And then I think it's time to make a choice to let go a little.
And your show in particular, the topic of death is so taboo. People go out of their way to avoid that topic, which is another thing I think about all the time. But I think it's so important to go there. I think we might be creeping up to a time where we can maybe talk about death a little more openly, which I think is really interesting. But how did you tackle that in developing the show initially?
With the show, I thought, okay, this happened, and it's going to happen to every single person, whether we talk, acknowledge it, whatever. And I saw it happen up close with both my parents. And the thing I learned was, yeah, it's not going anywhere. Okay. So if we start the show with the premise and just tell people there's going to be a lot of death in this show, do not run out the door, we're going to be okay. And I think that's what the message, it's like, yes, we will die. And in between, we're going to be okay if we take care of ourselves and each other. The thing, it's interesting, when I mentioned to my friends and things, even close friends, I said, okay, my mom has this terminal cancer. And they would look at me and you could see in their eyes the fear that was going to happen to them too. And here's the thing, it is. But you could tell that people don't like to go there because it's very, very frightening. And my thing is, if we can look at the frightening, horrifying things, take a step back and say, wow, this is universal. And can we look at this in a way where make it okay in a trusted space? So I create this space of like, we're in this room together and we're okay for the next 90 minutes. I promise. And I promise them it's not going to be the end of the world when we talk about this. It's going to be the beginning of a new thing. And people will trust. People want to trust. I think if I leave them in good hands and really commit, then everyone's all right. And we go home and we live our lives.
Truly.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you were developing this show, so it's coming back. You're doing the show again, which we're all very excited about. It'll be at Catalyst Ranch, which is a neat space.
The greatest space ever. If you haven't, look it up online and catalystranch.com. Great meeting space, great people, community feeling, eccentric rooms that are gorgeous.
Darn colorful and happy in there. Yeah.
It's like your wacky, amazing aunt's house.
Antique collection.
Yes. From all over the world. She went on trips. So anyway, I'm doing it there just for two days on the 3rd and 4th of December. And it's coming back, and it was prompted by what's going on in our nation. I said, this is time to tell this story. It is not a particularly, it's not a political story. It's not but it is a story about change. And we need it. And I also feel like to slow down and be with each other in a room for an hour and a half without any phone, because I, like most people, I've been glued to social media. Glued. And I needed it, and it was comforting to me. And I want now to reconnect person to person. It's very important for me to move on and be with people in a room, whether I'm watching someone or performing. So I decided to bring it back. I thought, let's do it for two shows and see how it goes and see how we can connect together and see where the show is at. I did it the last time was 2 years ago, and very different climate in our world. And so maybe I just felt like, you know, maybe it needs to be told again, and I'm the only one that can tell it. So, here we go.
I'm already getting requests of how do I find out about this show and tickets and all that. So before we go to break, tell us where we can find out about that.
So you just go to catalystranch.com, Catalyst, not Cadillac, catalystranch.com, and then you just go to public events, and it's called Why Not Me? A solo show by Jen Bosworth. And you can just link, there's ticket links right there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, get your tickets. I suspect it'll be sold out before we're off the air. But we'll be right back. We're talking with Jen Bosworth about the aforementioned show and how she is using comedy and theater as a vehicle for change, because that is the theme of tonight's show, is people that are doing the work person to person just to make the world better. So we're going to continue this conversation here in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Baby, I've been waiting.
720 WGN. That is, of course, my favorite Leonard Cohen song. Leonard Cohen, who passed this week. I was very sorry to see him go. So talented, so many beautiful songs that I think so many people connected to. Everybody knows such a great song. But Waiting for the Miracle, that was the one I always loved. That's what we just heard. So we had to play a little of that this evening. My friends, we're here with Jen Bosworth tonight. We are talking all about people who have seen a moment, something, a flash in their lives where they could make a difference, where they could change things dramatically and took it. I'm always very, very interested in people that don't wait for permission, that just go and do the thing. And so tonight we're talking with a bunch of those people. I'm very honored by all of our guests tonight that we've had with us. And for those of you asking, yes, I will be sharing links to all of the organizations and projects and shows that all of my guests are talking about. It will be at WGNradio.com where you can get podcasts and all the good stuff, but I'll also tweet them out after the show. So, Jen Bosworth, we have been talking about your one-woman show that after a couple of years is coming back, that is very exciting. Two performances only at Catalyst Ranch. Everybody head to Catalyst Ranch and find your tickets right now, because I suspect there are not many left. So your show, Why Not Me, is a show that really came out of a period in which your mother was ill, and all the stuff that came up with that it brought up. And it really addresses illness, caregiving, grieving, death, dying, all those things in such a powerful way. But it does so through comedy.
It does. It does indeed. And you talk about those moments, you know, where people really know. I was working as a drug and alcohol counselor when my mom was sick and dying. And I loved it. And it was very fulfilling, and it was very hard. And it was very apparent to me that my creative side was sort of lacking in terms of my art. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll start writing something. And it just so happened that, unfortunately, during my desire for a creative burst, she was declining. And so I thought, well, why not write this stuff down? Because she said some amazing things. We heard some amazing things. The title came to me before the show. We were sitting at Highland Park in the oncology center, and we looked around, and we used to say, like, why us? Like, why is this happening to us? We're good people. We had never been touched by cancer or any terminal illnesses in our family, per se. say, and my mom was very, you know, pretty young when she was diagnosed. Why us? And then one day we were sitting in the waiting room waiting for my mom's blood tests, and it's filled with mothers and daughters and sons and husbands and wives, and it's filled. And I turned to my mom and I'm like, Mom, look around. And I was like, Mom, why not us? Like, we're not special. And she was like, we are not special. And of course, you can argue everyone's special, but we are not. We are not special. We are human beings, and this is part of being a human. And that's where the show came from. And then I started chronicling sort of my journey from being a kid to an adult and moving to LA and being an actor and then coming home. And coming home to take care of the people I loved. Who were funny and who were, you know, could be a pain and who, but ultimately these are my people. And I started writing it down. I just started writing and I, you know, people sometimes ask, like, how did you do it? You just start. Mm-hmm. You said it. You don't wait for permission. You don't wait for someone to say, hey, I'll give you a grant to, I mean, that would be great. But, you just start doing the thing, chunk it down and write. Or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Run.
Make the film, write the book, do the thing.
Walk the block,
yeah.
Start moving, you know, whatever it is, take the dance class. So.
And do the work. I think that's the key thing, especially, you know, with writing. A lot of people come to me, a lot of young people come to me and say, I want to be a writer. What do I do? Should I go get an MFA? Should I do this? What should I read? What should I learn? And I say, you should sit your butt down and write every day and keep doing it. Because you have to do the work.
I think you don't get to have the good experiences unless you do the work.
Truly.
You need both. I mean, you have to do the work, and it's hard. And nobody, and the business of dying is hard. The business of watching someone go and taking care of them is very challenging and beautiful. And I think the message too is like, death is not bad. It is just not.
It's heavy.
It's heavy. It's hard. It's sad. It is not bad. And I can say watching both my parents die that it is hard and heavy and intense. And it's also not the end of the world for the person watching.
So I'm sure that somebody is listening and thinking, I want to have a cathartic experience and I can help other people with what I went through and help them understand and help them process through some kind of art, some kind
Absolutely.
Of creative project. So what was the moment for you where you said, this is a show?
So my mother was an immigrant from Colombia, from South America. And she came to this country. She was 13 and she worked and 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 worked some more. And then she and I and so when she was I had the show, but I couldn't see how it was going to be produced. I didn't whatever. I just couldn't see it. And as she was declining, she called me over and she said, you don't know this and your sister doesn't know this. You guys don't know this. She called both of us over and she said, I've been saving a little money for you. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, I know you're an artist and I know that you want to do your art. Take this bit of money and make your play or make your story or your book. And I was blown away. And this is someone who worked her whole life and was always like, you have to have at least two jobs at all times. But she realized that I was an artist and that she had perspective towards the end, I think, about what's important. And she could see that my vision for myself, I wasn't really living. And she was right. And so it allowed me to make the show in 2012. And she passed away in November 16th of 2011. And the show opened on November 16th of 2012. So it was a year to the date.
That's powerful and significant.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Truly. And what happened just in the minutes we have remaining?
Sure.
What happened as a result of the first time the show went up? How did that move people?
So it was unbelievable in terms of how much hope that people said they felt after the show. And it, in, and you know, people always say it's bigger than me, but it actually was not about me. The message of the show moved them. People say, I went back to school. Like, cause I, there's a part in the show where I just say, you know, if I can stand up here and do this, you can do, I promise you, you could, if you want to get a botany degree, go. And people have written me, cause you can, my email is just out there. Written me and said, I went back to school. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And they're like, your story. And so I don't really, I would love people to remember me, but more than that, I want them to remember the message of this. I'm, and people say it, but it's true. I'm the messenger. This story wrote, I worked very hard on it, and then it took its over itself, as many projects do. It had this life of its own, and people just come up and they're like, I never cried for my, that I lost my mom until I saw your show. And that's what this is about. I would love a part of me to be rich and famous. That would be awesome for several reasons. But more than that, I really do care that people can get what they need from their life before it's their turn to pass on. So that, if that happens, then I've done well. Do you know what I mean?
Indeed. So we're all going to head to Catalyst Ranch on Saturday, December 3rd and Sunday, December 4th. We're going to go there. We're going to pick one of those days.
Yes.
We're going to go.
Yes.
We're going to see your show.
Yay.
In the meantime, we're all going to connect with you on social media and all that to learn about updates.
Yep.
All that good stuff.
Great.
Jen Bosworth, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break. We're going to get you to news. And then when we come back, we are talking with our good friend Gerard McClendon, who is doing a lot of work, tireless levels of work around unearthing big topics, having powerful conversations that need to be had, and how he is addressing some major issues through film. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. We have been talking all night with change makers, people that are like, hey, I see an issue. I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to wait for permission. I'm not going to wait for anything. I see a moment and I'm going to seize it, and I'm going to change things right here. Because as I said at the top of the show, my motto is, if you catch yourself saying, hey, someone's got to do something about this problem, then that person should be you. That is my rule, and that has always served me well. Even though it's given me a lot of projects, they're all good projects and worth doing. My friends, we now are joined by our good friend Gerard McClendon. He, of course, is the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media, and he hosted the McClendon Report on CLTV. You know this guy. You know who I'm talking about. Emmy Award winning Gerard McClendon is here in studio with us, and we are very, very grateful to have him. Hi.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Amy.
Glad to have you back on the show.
Great to be here.
So I thought of you as we picked this topic for tonight, of people that are change makers and who see issues and just grab them and run with them, because you live that so very much. And the projects that you're involved in, even your show, you tackle very big, big topics. And you do so in you know, in such a way that I think is so important. And that's just the very head on. You don't tiptoe around them. You're like, hey, here's the deal. Here's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you could just start by sharing a little bit about how you keep that focus, because you tackle a lot of big things on your show, in the other projects that you're doing. You know, what is like the single through line and the single driving force for you?
That's a great question. You know, in this 2-minute news cycle world that we're in now, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in news that we think is credible. There's a lot of noise in people who tweet, people on Facebook, Instagram. There's just lots of noise out here. And so with my programming, I try to cut through the noise with Counterpoint, you know, invite pensive, thoughtful guests on the show, talk about topics for a 30-minute period that most people probably can only talk about for 2 or 3 minutes, and just kind of let the topic and let the juices marinate, you know, and hopefully come up with a solution by the end of the show or by the end of the week or by the end of the year. That's what we try to do.
And you seem to have a very engaged audience with your show. You're always putting tweets and Facebook comments and things like that up as part of the show, which I think is so important. But you know, I think you touch on a really interesting thing, that social media is so complicated right now because it has the power to connect us with people that care about the things that we care about on the other side of the world. and forge a meaningful bond, and yet it's overwhelming. And I think we've certainly see that play out this past week, if not the last year in this country, of just how difficult it can be for people to cut through that noise, how filtered, how echo chamber-ish it is for how we build our own networks.
This is why your show is so important, because I think that you do cut through the noise on this show, for one. I mean, you're Amy Guth.
I sure try.
But even beyond that, you know, it's time now for people to begin thinking again. People don't read anymore. People don't allow themselves to go into meditation or deep thought. People don't pray anymore. People don't look at their fellow man as someone who is worthwhile, someone who is to be cherished, you know. And so this is why we present the programming that we do. And this goes right into why, you know, I'm doing this documentary.
Yeah, I want to talk about that documentary. It is called Forgiving Cain. And it is about a topic that is very, very personal to you, that you have really devoted a lot of effort to. Tell us about that, if you would.
So, you know, I've been, ever since my parents' death, murdered 2009, I've been thinking about how we place value on certain people in society. So I juxtapose this in the documentary, where my family dominated the news for 2 weeks during the weeks of the murder. And then when the trial started, my family dominated the news again. And so it's not that that's a good or a bad thing. You know, you can be ambivalent about it. But there were 7 other families who lost loved ones during that time period, and they didn't get any news coverage. Because I was considered a quote unquote famous Chicagoan at the time, my family's story, my family's murder dominated the news. And although that may have seemed right and fair for my family, it was so not right and so unfair for the other families who lost loved ones in that same week. You know, and so it shows you that, you know, we are a respecter of persons. You know, we look at certain people with a higher axiology, a higher axiological bent than we do others. We value people, whether it be aesthetically or ethically, more. And that's a tragedy in society. It really is.
That's so true.
You know, when the Cubs won the World Series, of course the Cubs are going to dominate the news. Go Cubs. I love the Cubs. Loved the Cubs since I was a child. But there were, I believe, 17 homicides during the World Series in Chicago. And you probably can't name one person that died during the World Series.
Right. Which I think is so important, that we've seen this movement come up in the last couple of years, really, the importance of naming the person. That, you know, we see this, the hashtag say her name started to trend after Sandra Bland's death, that of let us not forget this person behind a larger news headline or the next big tragic event or something, like the next celebrity, next Kardashian thing.
Right.
Let us not forget that a human being lost their life.
Yes, it's like celebrity news, regular news, tragedy, celebrity news. And it's this whole business as usual aspect that I'm looking at as well, where even when you look at the news, it's like, okay, we open up with the blood of the day, the tragedy of the day, and then we go to the rest of the news for 13 minutes, and then we may have a human interest story, and then we always come in with the weather and the sports. It's the same script every night. I'm suspect of that. You know,
we all are.
And
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, does a weather forecast have to be 7 minutes long? Do sports have to be 5 to 6 minutes long? Maybe some nights we should just say the scores or show the scores in a crawl.
Because we have more to do.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's nuanced, right? It's tricky, because on one hand, it is newsworthy if something happens to a person of note.
Yes.
Right. It is newsworthy. But then so is an entire spree of homicides that is also newsworthy, and it's nuanced, but it's fixable.
Yes.
It is a fixable problem.
Yes. And in the documentary, Forgiving Cain, we're trying to look at creating a higher awareness of why we should value human life as precious. I don't think we do that anymore. People don't look each other in the eye. People don't even say hello to each other anymore. You know, and it's frustrating. And how we lose as human beings when homicide is allowed, it's accepted, it's promoted with no serious combatants.
Mm.
You turn on certain radio stations and you hear the glorification of murder. You hear the glorification of gun toting and drug selling, and no one's ever checked for that. That's problematic to me.
And even in our language, we're kidding, but we have things in our language like, I'm going to kill that guy.
Yeah.
You don't really mean you're going to kill your spouse. You just mean I'm angry.
Right.
But we've gotten away from saying I'm angry.
Yes.
And we say exaggerated things like, oh, man, I'm going to shoot that guy. Like, right. What? We know you're kidding, but we're at a point where I think that joking about that kind of stuff is normalizing things.
Yes.
In such a dangerous way.
Yes.
In such a nuanced way. And something you said a little bit earlier, I think, is so important. You were talking about how we don't give ourselves time for contemplation because we're always go, 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 mm-hmm. and looking at the next thing. We have millions of distractions every day. Most of them are in our pockets on our phones.
Yes. They're,
every little ding on our phones is a little hit of dopamine waiting to give us good news or bad news or whatever, right? But I think it's really interesting how that language has shifted too, because if you say, oh, did you read this interesting piece in the New York Times about this, this, or this, someone will go, oh, yeah, I saw that. Right, but did you read it?
Absolutely.
Did you see it?
And
did you read it?
And you might even have the link in your Facebook feed, but if you don't click the link and read the article, it's hearsay.
Yeah.
It's, you read the headline. The headline didn't really talk about the crux of what's in the article. And then you spread or you forward the headline at to a multitude of non-readers. And then the real story never gets told because everyone's floating on the headline.
Absolutely. And it becomes our own brand of conjecture almost that we're like, I'm going to read the headline. Make up in my mind fill in the backstory for myself and spread it because that's preposterous and people need to know. But like, well, read it. So I've gotten in the habit of saying that on Facebook. I've even started saying, guys, read this to the end. This is really important.
Yes.
My friends, we're talking with Gerard McClendon. He is the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media. He is, you know, this guy. He does all kinds of things, all kinds of very, very important projects. One of them is a documentary about, and I loved how you described this, about looking at placing a higher value on human life. It is framed around people that have lost loved ones to gun violence. But at the end of the day, it is really about human beings being human to one another. And we'll talk about that more in just a bit. We'll take a break. Come back here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. We have been talking all night with change makers. We've been talking with people who said, you know what? I'm not going to wait for permission or the right time or whatever. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do that thing. And we have had some wonderful guests with us tonight, both by phone and in studio. And our guest right now is no exception. We're honored to have the one and only Gerard McClendon with us. He is the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media and Emmy-winning TV host right here with us tonight. He does many things. He addresses many really important topics on his television programming, but he's also working on a documentary that I think is so fascinating. And it is all about connecting with people who have been affected by acts of violence, particularly around gun violence, because that is a topic that has such a personal connection to you, Gerard, and you've done so much really meaningful work in that area. But I loved what you said right before the break, that although this is framed in talking with people affected by violence, that it's really about restoring that high value on human life and reclaiming that both in narrative and in deed. I really, really love that.
Yes. Can we value a human life? So there's this segment where we're exploring what is a human life worth and what are the toll? You know, people don't look at the toll of the expenses on the family after a loved one dies. So we look at grief. You know, can you put a dollar figure on that? Probably not. Funeral expenses, you can. Insurance, you know, actuary costs, police investigations, the actual television reporting, the resources, the lighting, flights that families have to take to get to funerals, victims, you know, loss of income. You know, when you take someone's life, which could take a fraction of a second, you have thrown the universe into turmoil. Nobody talks about that after the 10 o'clock news.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about that while or after the family is grieving. And so we want to explore these in the document. We interview 22 families who lost a loved one to violence. And the stories are chilling. They really are. Most of the people in Chicago, when they see the documentary, people will recognize some of the individuals. But I'm trying to look at, can a person forgive a murderer as well? And what is the definition of forgiveness? Whether you can forgive a perpetrator, why should you forgive, and what's the purpose of forgiveness? And so, you know, everyone has their own definition. And when people see the documentary Forgiving Cain, they will see that some of those definitions, very personal indeed, will come out.